What's up, guys? Coach Az. Welcome to episode 3 of the Way of the Warrior podcast. If you are new here, I am a kickboxing coach from the UK, and we talk in this podcast about all things martial arts related. Regardless of your discipline, there should be something here for you. Today, I said I was going to talk a little bit about gym cancers, so that's where we're going to get started. And then I thought I'd talk a little bit about training with injuries and just some general advice and wisdom and things I've picked up over the years on that one. Let's start with bad sparring partners. Before we get started, I'm going to apologize in advance for some unprofessionalism in this podcast. I am due a phone call. This is the only time I can record this podcast today, but I'm also due a phone call in about half an hour. I'm betting on the phone call not happening, but if there's a sudden cut and edit somewhere in this podcast, you know what happened. Bad sparring partners. I've just said bad sparring partners because that's the first thing on my list, but what I actually meant to say is gym cancers. Now, gym cancers, this is a term I picked up from a guy who does a show on YouTube called Chujitsu. And Chewy, which is his kind of coach name, he's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach, and he did a great video. I'm trying to remember the exact title, but I think it was something along the line of how to deal with gym cancers. I think it was the video, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it was the video that blew up his channel. It got him a lot of notoriety. And it was such a good video because as a coach watching it, that term gym cancer is not something I'd heard before, but I instantly related and understood what he was describing. Now, gym cancer is a bit of a broad term for effectively students that you really don't want in your gym because they cause issues. There's a couple of different types that I've identified. One is the bad sparring partner or training partner. The next one is someone with a bad attitude. And then the last one that I've figured out is a bad student. And I'm going to break all of these down and go through them. So if you're a coach watching this, maybe you're going to identify with some of these people. You're going to have experienced them. If you're a student, you probably got one of these guys in your gym or training with you. And maybe I can give you some advice and some help on how to manage them and how to deal with them. The first thing I'll say is, before we get into it, is most gyms have them. They might not always have them, but these people do get into gyms. You know, that at the end of the day, these businesses operate in a way where, for the majority of cases, the doors are open. You know, there's an email address, there's a phone number. Get in touch if you'd like to come down. You're welcome for a free trial, and then your choice to sign up. Now, some clubs have a bit more of a screening process where not only are you trialing the club to see if you like it, but the club is trialing you to see if you fit in with its dynamic, which is a good thing. We're going to get onto that a little bit more about how I'm trying to implement that more moving forward. Let's go through the types of gym cancers. The word gym cancer is such an accurate term because, similar to cancer, it can spread through your culture. So if you don't address it early as a coach, if you don't handle it, if you don't deal with it, it will spread like a wildfire. It spreads like a disease. And it starts infecting other people in the room. And it starts inviting more of that type of person into your gym. And that's where it becomes dangerous, because very quickly, if you've got a room of 10, 15 people and three of them turn, I mean, let's say 15 people, three of them turn, you're getting close to a third of the class being the wrong type of student. And then that's going to have a knock-on effect to the rest of it. So you have to get onto these things. It sounds trivial, but it can have a real dramatic impact on the culture at your school. Let's start with the obvious one. This is the one that I think comes to mind for most people, and it's a bad sparring partner or a bad training partner. This could be striking. This happens a lot in striking, but I've also definitely experienced this and seen this in grappling. So in striking, this is someone that hits too hard. It's someone that's always just kind of going in way too intensely. They've got way too much kind of riding and pushing on it as they go forward. They act like it's the fight rather than it being, you know, a game, rather than it being training, rather than it being sparring. It's the fight. They give you attitude if you try to tell them that they're going too hard. They tell you they're not. They insult you and say that you're a coward or whatever it might be. And in grappling, it's very similar. You know, they just grapple too hard. They hold submissions too long. They're putting white belts in heel hooks and advanced submissions that they don't even know what they're doing with. Like, they haven't even experienced it, let alone how to defend it or even where or when to tap against it. It's a real big problem. And a lot of the time, these are the ones that kind of stick around for way too long because for whatever reason, a coach doesn't feel comfortable to confront them on it, or they do it in a way that coaches don't see it or don't pick up on it. The biggest thing you'll have is the people who it's happening to never speak up. So if you're a person and you're sparring someone and you've sparred them a couple of weeks and every week you just feel like compared to the rest of the room, they're going much harder. You don't then go and tell your coach. You don't go speak up about it. The problem there is then when we're surveying the room, we can often be tricked into thinking everyone's happy. Because I understand just from, you know, from years of doing it, that people do spar at different paces. Some do tend to lean into the lightness. Some do tend to lean into the heaviness. It's a spectrum. And I have no issue with either end of the spectrum within a certain extent. So I don't mind you going super light. I also don't mind you going a little heavier. I don't want you to go full on sparring because we've talked about that in previous videos about CTE and the risk of brain damage and everything that goes along with that. But there is a time and a place, and there are certain people where sparring a bit harder is what they enjoy, and it's that that's their natural temperament, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Especially if both people are consenting or both people are up for it and both people are on the level. And the problem is when one of you's not on the level and then you don't say anything either to the person or if you can't talk to them or you've talked to them and it hasn't changed anything to the coaching staff. Because if we're unaware of it, it's very difficult for us to address it and to fix it. I've done a video specifically on how to deal with bad sparring partners. If I remember, I'll link it below, but just type in Warrior Martial Arts bad sparring partners and it should pop up. And I talk about the idea of the natural instinct and what people normally tell you is just avoid this person. Don't partner them. Don't match up with them. You know, there's loads of people in the room. Get with someone else. And I tend to lean away from that and tell people, no, do partner them and try to reassert the point. You're going too hard for me. And there's not, and this is like ego gets caught up in it, right? Because you don't want to come across as a coward. The word I use with my guys is marshmallow, because I'm trying to make sure that it's politically correct enough that I'm not insulting anyone by calling them a female reproductive organ, and I'm not trying to put you into a box. But a marshmallow is soft and squidgy and not good for an awful lot. Marshmallow. This is the term I use in general, not to insult any of my students, but when people feel this way, it's a kind of safe way of me to say it. So that's the word I'm going to use today. You don't want to feel like you're being a marshmallow, so you don't say anything. You just assume this is the way it is and I need to toughen up. I need to get used to it. And that's wrong. It's not right. You don't need to toughen up. They need to lighten up. That's what it is. And it's a personal thing in the sense that if you feel it's too heavy, it's too heavy. There's no question about it, in my opinion, anyway. If you're in a fighting gym, as in everyone in there is trying to become a world champion, and then it's too heavy for you, then maybe you're at the wrong gym. We can talk about the gym cultures and how that gym might need to lighten up in general, but maybe if that's the way, when you spar everyone in the room, that's what it's like. That's the gym culture. Maybe you need to go somewhere else. But when it's one person, when it is one of these gym cancers, you need to talk to them about it. Sometimes it's going to be met with big resistance. Yeah, sometimes they are going to call you words to the effect of a marshmallow. Sometimes they're going to tell you, no, it's not. I'm only going, the famous one is they give you their percentage. I'm only going 30%. How do you know you're going for? How, like, you can't calculate what percent you're going, and no, you're not going 30%. Thank you very much. But it's nice of you to think that it's like a power level in Dragon Ball Z, and you can adjust it like that to a percentage. Stupid. Try to talk to them. Try to manage it. And if not, you need to talk to your coaches, and they need to be held accountable and take responsibility for it. I've had it before where a guy got hurt in sparring. He got like two black eyes. His lip was bust open. I missed it. I didn't catch it. When it happened, I just wasn't looking at that side of the room. It happened very quick. It was just like a big blast of a combo. And he didn't really say anything following that. He didn't mention it. And then he messaged me a few days later with the pictures, and I felt terrible. I took full responsibility for it. I didn't put it on the guy even who had done it. But I knew it was my responsibility to go talk to that guy, show him the pictures, show him what he did, and demand of him, expect of him to apologize and to adjust his sparring accordingly. So, and that's what I did. I spoke to the guy, and at the following class, he went straight over to him. He apologized for what happened. He, you know, spoke to him. They cleared the air. And then I had a word with him about his contact, and you know, we need to tone it down a little bit. We're not that kind of club. We've never had an issue since. I don't think we'll have an issue again. I'm proud of the way I handled it afterwards, but I'd wish I caught it in the moment. But that's what I'm saying is it happens. Coaches don't catch it all the time. We're not infallible. We make mistakes. These things happen. As does the person who hit him is not what I would consider a bad sparring partner. He just, in that moment, I think, again, they were both going a bit heavier. It was ramping up. The other guy wasn't comfortable with it and didn't say anything and kind of let it continue to its conclusion of the round. And that's why they both kind of walked away from it. And then again, he didn't say anything to me on the day. And then, you know, it got handled later. These things happen. That's bad sparring partners. Bad attitude. This is another real common one. This is one I think coaches tend to not stand for as much. But it all depends on a coach's confidence level, their authority within the gym. Because if you're like an assistant coach, you may not feel like you're in a position to tell someone to behave a certain way or to leave or whatever it might be. And these people often, they won't do this to head coach. They won't do this to the guy in charge, the guy who owns the building or whatever. But they'll do it to one of the assistants who maybe they don't respect in the same way. They don't hold them in the same regard. And these guys are rude. These guys are disrespectful. These people are arrogant. It's not that they're almost confrontational in their approach to everything. They question what you're teaching or what you're doing, not in a way where it's constructive in the sense that they need more information or they don't quite understand, but they're trying to pick holes in what you're doing. And there's a time and a place. I believe that we should be criticized because that's what makes us better. We should question everything we teach all the time. But when you try to like call out an instructor in the middle of a class in front of people, it's like, that's not a way of doing it. You're not going to, all you're going to do is get that guy's back up. And now you're going to kind of butt heads. You know what I mean? There's a time and a place after. Let him explain it, let him demo, and then get him to sign and go, I don't feel that what you're showing there was effective. And deal with it one-on-one. If you want to confront things in that way. The big thing with these ones is they're disrespectful to what you're trying to achieve within the club. So they're talking whilst the coach is talking. They're kind of showing that level of disrespect. And again, the problem is once a couple of people see it happening, a couple more people could start doing it. Before you know it, half the room is talking whilst the coach is talking. And it's ruined the training environment even for those who are not doing it because they now can't hear you, don't understand what's going on. You're having to explain things twice, three times over. These people are also often the ones who, like, they won't pay their fees. You have to chase them for their fees. They're like, yeah, just let me know what I owe. It's like, no, that's not how it works. Like when you go to a shop and you buy something, you check the price, you take it to the till, you pay the money, and then you get the product. And I don't know what it is about martial art clubs where people feel the need to do it differently, where they come to the class, do the class, and then wait for you to insist that they pay for the product. It's not how it goes. Like, you know the price. They're on the website. I'm sure there's a leaflet. I'm sure they're written on a wall somewhere. pay the price, and then attend to the class. These things can cause real issues in a club because, again, if an instructor isn't confident to go and deal with that, if they don't feel comfortable with approaching that, that can end up stacking up. And I had this in my very early years of teaching where, I guess through a bit of lack of self-confidence in what I was doing, I would let people go a few months without paying me. Before I'd be like, oh, sorry, you know, could you pay your fees? And I wouldn't even ask for like the previous months. I wouldn't even ask for those 3 months. I'd just try and get this month out of them because I was quite shy as a teacher. Real, like as a fighter, as a martial artist, I was super confident. But when I was new to business and the idea of taking money for teaching was alien to me, that was a real tricky thing to do in the early days. I've got a lot better at it now. I understand the importance of it and it doesn't happen anymore. But I've had it on occasions where people have racked up like a 6 month tab and then you have to have a real, you know, awkward conversation. I've lost friends over this exact topic where people have racked up a tab and then I've asked for it and they've took it the wrong way. Like I think they're not good for it or I think they're not going to pay me. And people have left the club and I've lost, you know, close friends through this. I won't share those stories because they're for me deeply personal. But it was a real issue. And again, that was a great example of the gym cancer thing because it happened with one guy who then was friends with another and then it started happening with him. Where, you know, behind doors, they probably had a conversation like, I ain't paid him for a couple of months. And the other guy's, well, why am I paying him? And, you know, you see how it goes. You see how it can spread down the chain. The last one, the last type of gym cancer is probably the one that goes unnoticed the most. And I actually think they're the most damaging. It's the bad student. And the bad student is late to classes. They're disruptive during the lessons and they lack focus on what you as the club and in the session are trying to achieve. I think these are the most damaging to your schools and because they're the most innocent. And that's why they get in and can kind of get ingrained in what you do. Examples of this are people who talk whilst they train. I don't mean the odd bit of banter or the odd bit of advice or help or anything like that. I mean you're full on having a conversation about what you did over the weekend or you're talking the entire round from second one to second 120 of a 2 minute round. You're just talking to the partner, whether they're replying or not. Because more often than not, they're not even responding to you, but you're just this type of person. You can't stop talking. And again, when you look at it, you look at two people and as a coach, you think, oh, you know, it's nice that they're talking, they're getting along, everyone's smiling, the room is happy. That's what I want. That's the culture I'm trying to breed. But really what you're doing is they're being disruptive to the energy of the room that you're trying to create. Your job as a coach is to create a level of energy in the room. The room needs to be focused. The room needs intensity. The room needs to all be working in the same way. Regardless of if one is much fitter than the other, everyone in the room needs to have the same focus, the same goal. They're working towards the same stuff. But if one is nattering away, having a little meeting, a little lunch date whilst at class, that can then start spreading. Because again, at first, the partner, they don't talk back. But eventually, because this person keeps talking to them, they start talking back. So now there's two of them having a conversation. Then you tell people to change partners and the chatterbox goes off and grabs someone else. And before you know it, a couple of weeks have gone by and you've got four or five people who think that it's okay to have a conversation during training. Especially when you have adults, this is a real tricky thing because to tell another full-grown adult in a class, stop talking like it's at school, yeah, you can see where that's like, that's a tricky thing for someone to have to do. But it's a really important thing to do. It's really important as a coach in a room, not only to say, you know, throw your jab like this, have your guard up like this, but to say, stop having little conversations whilst you're meant to be training. Get your mind right. Get your intentions right. Come here and do it for the right reasons. These people are also unfocused. They are the ones who do talk between rounds. So then you're explaining the drill. You say go and they turn around and say, what are we doing again? So now you're having to give them extra attention. Now, more and more people are getting less attention because they require more. They're a very disruptive element of your class. They will do a lot of damage to a martial arts school very quickly. They will dumb down what you're trying to teach really quickly. And this is where the whole, I really understand the idea of vetting people when they turn up to your gym, turn up to your school, because we spoke last week or the week before about reasons for training. We spoke about traditional martial arts and why they're a great thing for people who are not interested in being hit in the head, who are not interested in competing, how belt systems still have a value for people because they provide a level of progression to those who are not looking to fight. However, when you've got people who come in and are a disruptive force to your teaching and change the culture within your gym, regardless of what system you are, whether you're a fighting school or a grading school, they will dumb down the entire model. They will infect the entire system from the ground up. So when people come in to do a trial, not only do you need to make sure that they enjoy what you teach, that you provide a good product, a good service to them, but that they very clearly understand what you as a club stand for, and that they are going to fit in with that mold. I'll give you an example of one time I had to do this with somebody. This guy came in and he was super charged up and all he could talk about was fighting. He was like, when do we spar? How often do we spar? He just wanted to know about fighting. Can I wear MMA gloves? These are like the kind of questions he was asking. Keep in mind, for anyone who's new listening, I'm a kickboxing school. He's asking about grappling. He's asking about going to the floor. He's watched a UFC. You know, he's watched one UFC, one MMA fight, and he's gone, that's what I want to do. And he's just found the first martial arts school that's popped up on Google, and he's rocked up to the class. So I didn't tell, you know, what I don't want to do to anybody. I don't want to turn around and go, you can't join. This isn't the school for you. But you make it very abundantly clear what you offer. And I made it very clear to him. I was like, look, we're a family-based martial arts school. I've got 60-year-old person over there. I've got some kids over here. I've got some guys over here who love a spar. We've got a little bit of everything. We don't do any of the grappling or the wrestling. We're a stand-up kickboxing school. That's our focus. That's our intention. And you know, I pointed to a few things, and I could see him coming to the realization all on his own that, oh, this isn't what I'm looking for. So rather than me trying to sell him, because, and this is the mistake I see people make all the time, they try to sell them, this person, on joining their club. They're like, yeah, well, you know, we do some sparring. Yeah, I got this guy, he's about your size. Yeah, you know, we don't do grappling, but sometimes we play with, they'll say all this stuff that really isn't true and doesn't apply to try and get the sign up. But what you're doing is you're signing up. He's not a gym cancer, as in he's a bad guy. He's just signing up to the wrong gym. You're bringing someone into the wrong place. The same thing could be said for a little, you know, a little lady, little old grandma comes into a club. She's looking for kick fit. You know, she's seen a boxer size advertisement on TV, and she walks into a hardcore MMA or Muay Thai gym like that. And, you know, the guy tries to sign her up. He's like, yeah, you know, we've got bags, you've got gloves, you can hit stuff. They don't actually want her there, and she wouldn't benefit from going there. There's another place for that woman to go to and get the adequate type of training. So for the sake of the sale, you might take on someone who's going to affect your gym culture. That's what you need to be aware of. You, as a gym owner, you need to be really aware of it. And as someone going to a gym, you want to make sure that you pick a gym, pick a place that fits in with what you're trying to achieve and the kind of environment that you want to be around. It's not right or wrong. It's not good or bad, but it is different, significantly different. And it's really worth having an understanding of. So that was one of these people where it could have gone the wrong way. I could have signed this guy up, and I know within a couple of weeks, I would have had problems with him because I've experienced this with my own guys, but mostly at other places where the one person just doesn't fit in. And it's not doesn't fit in as in, you know, we don't like them, they're not our type of person or anything like that. It's just that they've got a different expectation of what training is and what it should be. They're not interested in your methodology or what you're trying to provide. and it's fine, but then let them go somewhere else. Allow that to happen as a coach and be comfortable with it. You're not, can't please everybody. The beauty of martial arts is it's such a wide spectrum of stuff that there's a martial art for everyone. There's a school for everyone, but not one school is for everyone. There's not one place where everyone's going to want to come and train. There are people who will come to my school, come to my classes and not enjoy it. And I'm perfectly okay with that because there are people who come to my classes and they wouldn't want to go anywhere else. And that's, they're the people that I try to serve. I work within a spectrum of what I teach and what I know and the environment that I want to provide for. That's that. Let's talk a little bit about training with injuries. Should you do it? How do you do it? If you're going to do it, why would you do it? Why would you not? Let's talk about it. The problem that arises instantly is injury is a very wide spectrum term. And it really varies depending on who you're talking to. Let's go back to the idea of the marshmallow guy. The marshmallow will see a sprain as an injury, as in they've sprained their wrist. I can't come to training, coach. I've sprained one of my wrists. Sorry, mate. Like, you got 2 feet and another arm that's absolutely fine. You can come to training. You don't have, I'm not going to make you use that sprained wrist. I'm not going to tell you to push through the pain. But there's other things you can do. You don't need to sit on your couch now because you've got a sprained wrist. For me, it goes to the other extreme. You could have an arm in a cast. It's broken. You can still get the work in. The work changes, but you can still get the work in. So the big thing is if you've got an injury, I do think you can train majority of the time. We're going to talk about the exceptions, but you need to do a different focus. If your leg's messed up, you work on your hands. Yeah, if you can still stand it, but your leg's messed up, you're not kicking with it today, work on your hands. If you can't, let's go with a slightly more extreme one, right? You've broken your leg, it's in a full cast, and you're bedbound. You can't move. I'd still train in the sense that I'd grab some dumbbells and I'd do some curls while I'm up there. If I could, I'd do some kind of core work, some sit-ups, some crunches. And beyond that, for sure, I'd watch some videos. I'd listen to some podcasts. I'd watch some fights. I'd do a little analysis. I'd find a way to get it in. I'd still get some training in, even in an extreme situation where you really can't get up and go to the gym. But with things like wrist injuries, elbow, shoulder, neck, these things are common. Like when you're doing a sport like this, you're going to hurt your elbow. You're going to hurt your wrist. You're going to hurt your ankle. Your knees are going to hurt. Your hips are going to hurt. And if every time one of these little injuries crop up and you know what's happened, you know, you've rolled your ankle and you've sprained it a bit. And every time this happens, you stop training to let it heal completely. It's going to happen a lot and you're going to miss an awful lot of time in training. Do not power through the pain. That's not a smart thing to do. That's how you push an injury to a place way beyond what it originally was. That's how you get into a real mess. Don't do that. But work around, adjust it. Inform the coaches, inform people around you, inform your partners so they know that you're going to have to make some adjustments to get your work in for that day. Here's where you should not train. Here's where you should not train. When an injury is unexplained and unexplainable, and you don't understand the root cause, you don't understand why. So here's a good one, back pain. Most of the time, you pick something up, something goes click, and you know, right, that's done my back in, okay? In that instance, you're probably not training. Let's say one day you're training and suddenly, randomly, you get this back pain. No rhyme or reason. You didn't do a jerky movement. Nothing particularly weird happened, but suddenly you're in pain. Pushing through that is very dangerous because you don't know what's happening. There's a really good story. I believe it's Randy Couture who had a heart attack whilst at training and tried to foam roll it out. He had tightness in his chest. The numbness in the arm. He thought he'd maybe pulled his pec or something. So he rolled on a foam roller on his chest, finished training, and then walked to the hospital after class. And they informed him, you've just had a heart attack. He trained through a mystery pain that he didn't really understand. This is an extreme example, but I think it explains the point quite well. I've had it really recently with one of my instructors. She's had a hernia, small one initially, continued to train her core. And I think during a plank or just after a plank or during a stretch, it's now opened up even worse because she didn't train around it. Now she's training around it. And now she's swapped out planks for leg exercises and she's waiting on a scan and she's going to be fine. You know, she's adapted. But at the time she didn't, and it ended up exacerbating the injury. It's made the injury worse than it should be. So it's really important to understand what's wrong. Don't go online and say, guys, you know, go in a Reddit forum and say, why does my ankle hurt when I kick? Go to a doctor. Guys, go see a doctor, go see a professional, get it looked at. Doctors have a tendency to play on the safe side. So they will always tell you, don't train, don't use it, don't exercise. That's their, you know, they have a moral obligation to look after your safety. So they're going to be their priority. But if they tell you, you've sprained your ankle, you need to rest it, listen to the doctor. But they didn't tell you anything about your hands or your other leg or any other part of your body. Lay on the floor and do some core work. Yeah, if you're a striker, go do a little bit of grappling where you can lay on your back and work on being in your guard. Even if it's not in your wheelhouse, you have no interest in it. But it gives you something to do. It lets you keep the engine running, lets you keep working regardless of the fact that you've got the injury. Chronic injuries, so things that maybe are caused by your sport. Real common ones are hip problems for both wrestlers, strikers. I mean, everyone, every single one of us, whatever your martial art is, we're so hip dominant in what we do. If you're a kicking martial art, you know, your hip is opening constantly. If you're a jiu-jitsu player, your legs are opening and closing constantly. And what happens is it's just wear and tear. You do it for 20 years, moving this joint like this, like this, like this. Eventually, that joint is going to wear out. It's going to lose its functionality. And that pain that's related with that is going to become chronic. You're going to have long, withstanding pain in that area. And the problem is where it's kind of come over time and you've got used to it, you feel the need to power through, to work through. An exception to this is if you're in a high level of competition, you might power through to get that championship. Yeah, to get that win, to become the world champion, you accept that you're going to have to go through this gauntlet with these injuries to be able to fight whilst you're in your good years, because the surgery is going to take you out for a year at least, and maybe you don't come out the other side the same. I listened to a great interview with, his name has just blown. Have you ever got that where the name just completely escapes you? Danaher. John Danaher, the BJJ instructor. And he talked about having his hip replacement surgery. And he said, the pain is gone. I had my hip replacement and the pain is gone, but the hip is not what it was. And he explains this idea, you know, if they're going to cut you deep like this, do a invasive surgery, those muscles are not going to go back the way they were before. So although he's now pain-free, he's got a weaker hip than he did previously. So you can see how if someone was in their prime competition years, they might deal with that pain in the background of a hip injury before getting the surgery, because they don't want to risk losing that edge they have in performance, because it's such a narrow margin. So you'll push through that pain and you'll say, you know, why did you do that to yourself? Why did you do that to your body? Well, if you've got that championship mindset, there's things that, believe it or not, trump the importance of your well-being and your health. And that's a crazy thing to say. Michael Bisping's a great example. He lost his eye and then went on to win the championship with one eye. His health came second to his aspirations and his dreams and what he wanted to achieve in his life. Sounds insane, but that's the way it was for him. Now, again, this isn't for most of us. The majority of us would prefer not to lose an eye, prefer not to need hip replacement surgery at 35 years of age. So for us, it's all about balance. It's about not going too heavy in any one area too often. I don't run. I understand the benefits of running. I think I get the best cardio I ever have when I run. I lose the most body fat when I run, but it wrecks my knees, wrecks them. I do a run now maybe once a week maximum. Max. And even that's an exaggeration. It's once every two. Not because I'm not motivated to go do it. I'll go do a run today. I'll go do a run tomorrow if I wanted to. But it wrecks my knees. I go run for 5K, which is, you know, maybe half an hour, not even that. And afterwards, I can feel the inflammation. I can feel the swelling in my knees. I can feel the aches. And I know that if I did that consistently over time, I'd need knee replacements in no time. Before I know it, I would need a knee replacement real quickly. So I don't do it. I do a lot more bag work. I cycle. I do a rowing machine. I enjoy a swim from time to time because these put less throttle on that knee joint and it allows me to preserve it a lot longer. I spend more time doing my martial arts training than anything else because for me, it's the thing that I know I can adjust. When my leg hurts, I box. When my shoulders hurt, I kick. And I supplement this with a nice, healthy weightlifting routine that primarily focuses on pulling movements. Yeah, things that are gonna retract my shoulder blades back and are gonna be the antithesis for everything that I do in training. Martial arts, everything we do is going forward, punching forward, grabbing people forward, kicking forward. We end up with a very weak back side. Yeah, my rear shoulders, your lats, your glutes. I mean, glutes are often quite strong on kickers, but in the wrong plane of motion. So it's really imperative for martial artists to train their back in their spare time, in their strength and conditioning, because what it does is it helps you avoid injuries down the line. It helps you avoid chronic muscular imbalances and issues that are going to arise later. The thing is we go punch and then we do press ups and then we do bench press, and it's like you're just rounding those shoulders and you're getting really strong at the front and really weak at the back. And you're only as strong as your weakest link, so you end up with a chronic injury, a really bad, you know, torn rotator cuff, dislocated shoulder, because you didn't do that little bit of maintenance to look after it. You didn't stretch enough. You didn't foam roll. You didn't use anti-inflammatory treatments and foods and ice. There's a huge thing at the moment where people are telling me that ice is not effective for healing because inflammation is the healing of the joint. I get all of that, guys, but in short term, you put ice on something, it reduces the inflammation. And if it's on a joint which you need to move tomorrow, if you need to get mobilizing, getting that inflammation down isn't a bad thing. There's a reason why top athletes still do things like ice baths, why you see fighters between rounds getting ice on their legs, on their back, on their joints, because it does do stuff. I understand the whole idea that a long-term injury, you're better off allowing it to be inflamed because that's blood rushing to the area to heal it. But don't think that if your knee's hurting that you can't stick a little ice pack on it for a few minutes, 15 minutes. It's not going to reverse the healing process, but it might take away some of the aches and pains and allow you to get on with the rest of your day. I've gone on a bit of a tangent there, and I apologize. Guys, I'm going to hold it there. Please let me know what you'd like me to talk about in the next video. I haven't got a topic in mind as of yet, so if you suggest something, that'll be the topic. You can lead the dance, and if not, I'm sure I will think of something for next week. Again, thank you for all the positive feedback I'm receiving on this series. It's really nice to hear. I'm really enjoying making these style of videos, the slightly longer conversations. I will keep doing everything else. Again, talk about the other videos. Do you want more drills? Would you like some equipment reviews? Would you like me to give more specific advice to certain situations? I am here to serve you, the people. I am here to give you whatever you desire to hear about. So please let me know. Thanks again for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, we are also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all of those places. So take a listen to us over there. If you're listening to us via a podcast, we are also available on YouTube if you'd like to see my ugly mug. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. Hit like, hit subscribe, and I will see you on the next one.